these years, blood, sweat, and tears, but I'm still here. Nothing can stop me. Run it up, run it up, run it up, run it up, run it up. Nothing can stop me.
Welcome back to the Grow Show. I'm here with a solo, my solo partner in crime today. Our CEO Scott is in Mexico, sipping on some pina coladas.
Undisclosed location.
Undisclosed location. He may or may not be at a wedding in Cancun. Yeah.
Go find him.
Yeah. Look for the guy on the beach. Nice bronze tan, sipping on a pina colada.
That's right.
But neither here nor there. The show must go on. I'm here today with my partner in crime, Jeff Winters. How are we doing today, Jeff?
Always must go on. Always. We're great. Always.
Are you focused today? You seem a little like you're not focused.
Couldn't be more focused. Okay. Always a little tricky as we head like end of the month, beginning of the month, sales-wise. I got to get my mind in the right place, but...
But you got it.
I'm back.
And here's the deal. Scott goes on vacation, but you know who doesn't go on vacation?
Who's that?
The sheriff. Of LinkedIn.
Do you want to talk about how people think I'm their favorite character on this show? I'd feel odd talking about it.
Yeah. So there was some feedback recently, a prospective client.
Two
prospective clients who said they listened to the Grow Show and that Jeff's their favorite. So Scott and I talked and we immediately decided we're not going to take their business.
Here's the thing. They didn't say that Jeff is their favorite. They said the sheriff is, I swear to God.
The sheriff.
Now, is that because they like the character? They don't know my name? I don't know. We shall see. But to them and to all of the other fans and listeners where I am their favorite, I thank you. And I'm going to bring it this week because as every week I am looking on LinkedIn, trying to find folks that are giving great advice. And more importantly, trying to find folks that are controversial lie today. I'm disagreeing with science and data. What are you going to do? But first, let us begin with the truth. They call that a tease, by the way. Media calls it a tease. Matt Popesel. I hope so. Matt Popesel, PhD, by the way. Not nothing. He says, we must hold ourselves accountable before we hold others accountable. Example, does our leadership ability meet established standards? Oops, there aren't any. Lacking any formal inspection requirements as, and I'm adding, for leaders, we need to create our own. I think the message here, Eric, is are you as a leader, do you have standards? Do you publish that? And are you holding yourself accountable to your team?
Yeah, I agree with this 1,000%. And frankly, I kind of feel guilty when I don't, right? Mm-hmm. Don't you feel a little guilty? Like when you, if you ask something of someone that you wouldn't do yourself. So I think the one benefit we have here is that everybody is typically promoted from internally. So they've played the role of the people they're managing in a lot of different situations. And then I think it's easier, you know, you went through what they went through. You can empathize more and oftentimes you can hop back in and, you know, hold, like, you show them that, yes, I'm not asking you to do anything that I didn't do previously and that I won't do now. And that's in regard to the job. But I do think in general, sometimes, you know, the leadership team, it's easy for them to take a pass.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we don't need to be as accountable as what we're asking of everybody else. And that's just not, that's not a good recipe for success.
Let me share something we do here. We have this A player score and every single person in the company, including our CEO, including Eric, including Jeff, the sheriff, we all have a score that shows each and every person how we are doing at this company. And anybody can look at my score. And that is what I am held accountable to.
I've
never seen it. And I think it's great. I think, and also what you need to avoid, little concept here, also rhymes, rules for thee, but not for me. People hate this.
Yeah.
I have rules that I enforce on you and accountability that I bring to you, but it doesn't apply to me.
Yep.
You got to be on time for meetings. I don't got to be on time for meetings. People hate that.
That's a really good point.
Thank you.
Good find.
Yeah.
Who was that? Who was that from?
That was from, I got to go back now.
We'll get it later.
Matt Popesel.
PhD. Oh, that's right. Matt Popesel. PhD. Smart guy.
PhD. Smart guy. Smart shit. All right, next. A little more tactical, mixing it up today before we get to the controversy. Gaetano Nino Dinardi says...
I'd give you about a 70% shot that you got that right.
I really like this guy. I've read some stuff. Short form vertical video is the most engaging content medium, yet I don't really see many B2B companies leveraging it. If you look where the world is going, it's about quick hits of content dopamine. There's a ton of ways B2B companies could use vertical videos, customer success stories, 60-second product feature explainers, how to do something cool with your product, entertaining did you know, strong point of view talking head videos, but all I see B2B companies doing is chopping up clips of their boring podcast, probably like this, and running ads to those clips. It's a played out strategy at this point. I love short form vertical
videos. That's great. That's great. I mean, if I can't watch it on my phone, I'm probably not watching it. And if it doesn't, if it's not enticing and, you know, pulls up in my feed, I think that's a really good point.
Yep. And I'm actually going to tie this back into a tip for sales later. It's a double tease. Last, and this is the lie. People are going to hate this. I know people are going to hate this, but I'm going to explain myself. Toby says, your manager has more impact on your mental health than your therapist or your doctor. Having a good boss can literally change your life. Okay. All right. So here's where I'm at on this. Okay. And Eric and I were reading the same books. We're doing our philosophy. We're doing our Zen. Okay. Yeah.
It is. Stoicism is different than Zen, I would say.
Stoicism. Zen.
Thank you. Yeah. Different. But go ahead. Please continue.
He's read three chapters. He's a damn expert. I think we need to decouple our manager's behavior from how we react to anyone, including your manager. I think this is a lie because I would encourage us, not to say that people like managers can't negative. I'm not a mental health expert. Let me be clear. I'm an expert in very few things. In fact, being the LinkedIn sheriff, maybe the only one. I digress. I think we need to focus on how we react, not what the action was. That's why I think sure. This is. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I agree with you and I disagree with you. The first part I agree with you on is, well, I guess I should say, I don't think it's a full lie, but I 100% agree with you that happiness or our mental health is 100% in our control. We're reading the book Happiness Advantage.
Yeah.
It's a great example where it talks about how you control your happiness at the end of the day. It's all relative.
Yes.
There's people with way far less and worse adversity than you've ever gone through that are way happier than you. Why is that? Is it because of the events that happened to them? No, it's because they control their happiness. So I 100% agree with you that as an individual, you should look at this and not ever let a manager dictate your mental health or your happiness. On the second hand, if you are a manager or leader, I think you can have a strong, strong impact on your team members' mental health.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Let me tell you what we're not saying, though, out there. Like, we're not saying, like, look, there's so much written and studied in the world of mental health. We don't know shit. Like in the grand scheme. Like, yeah. I don't know if, there's mental health is, in our opinion, something not 100% in your control. Like, there's stuff with people's mental health that is not within their control.
Sure.
I'm just purely saying, in my opinion, you have far more control over how you react to someone or something than you think. And I'm 100%. Empowering our listeners and people not to be resigned to the fact of, like, I have a shitty manager who's an ass.
Yeah. Makes my life terrible.
And my life's terrible. And I'm going to go to work and my life's going to be terrible. No, 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 no. I am going to react differently. I'm going to react differently. I am going to choose to react a certain way. That's the message I'm trying to get across here to our loyal, faithful listeners.
Let's go one step further. Quick tip.
Quick tip.
Quick tip of how you turn any bad manager into a good manager.
Quick tip.
Every day, write down, as hard as it may be, write down three things that your manager helps you with or why you respect them. or why this is actually a good experience that you're going through.
Good.
If you do that day in, day out, day in, day out, eventually, all of a sudden that bad manager isn't going to be very bad anymore. And oftentimes we impose our views on people so much so they turn into the people that we think they are. The Pygmalion effect, right? Like if you... Yeah, the Pygmalion effect.
Can we check that out? Is that how you pronounce that?
That is exactly how you pronounce it.
The Pygmalion effect.
You didn't read the book.
I'm reading the book.
Let's make sure the pronunciation was right. But it talks about, you know, if you have someone who is aspiring to be good at something, the more you tell them that they are going to be good at that, the more likely they are to succeed.
The Pygmalion effect.
Correct.
That was a fun one. I now know why people think I'm their favorite character on this podcast.
Why is that?
Back to you, Eric.
Back to you. Well, Jeff, I got to give credit where credit's due. Thank you. Katie did a great job picking those LinkedIn topics for you today. Those were great samples to go through. Thank you, Katie. Next topic, 50 for 50. Mm. Jeff, you're going to have to fill the shoes today.
I'm back.
Back.
The people have asked and I have answered. Two segments for me today.
How do you like that? You like the sound? You feel just a little bit more important when you get to go after Scott's sound?
Yeah. I feel more important having a sound effect. Like, I wonder what that would do to the morale of people if they all had a different sound effect when they entered the room or began speaking. So 50 for 50 today, not going to create our own. This is Scott's thing, but what we are going to do is we're going to go back in the time machine and review a 50 for 50 that I don't think got enough justice. I don't think got enough play because it is both extremely important and really unique. And it is the idea of having a mobility culture. And for those who don't immediately recall this concept, effectively what Scott was saying is, if we're going to start any company ever again, one thing we'd immediately instill is that people can and should and will move and have a lot of different jobs within the organization and underline in different disciplines, in different disciplines. And for us, what that means is the vast majority of people here start on the phone as an SDR. And from there, the possibilities are literally endless at our organization. Eric started as an intern. Now he's the president. We have people on our accounting team who started as SDRs. We have people on our recruiting team, on our creative team. Every part of the business has people that started as an SDR and then went to a different position or discipline and then moved around and came back. And in addition, so that's piece one. And then piece two is, we've got folks that move forward, move back, move sideways, and it happens pretty quickly. And it is so unique and so beneficial to this organization. And I was thinking of another company that does this, Eric, Enterprise. Enterprise mm-hmm. Rent-A-Car, fellow St. Louis company. Maybe there's something in the water about great St. Louis companies that start you at one. Everybody, I think this is true. If it's not true, it's close to true. The Pygmalion effect, speaking of close to true. Everyone at Enterprise Rent-A-Car, which is a huge company, I think last I read it was like a $20 billion revenue company, starts washing cars. Mm-hmm. Starts washing cars. And then works their way up. And it provides this incredibly different environment and scope through which you view the business as an individual contributor. But as a leader, it just gives you so much flexibility when you have people who leave or you have people who maybe aren't doing as good a job as they can. Like, you have this enormous base of people to go, yep, Elliot was an account manager. He's run accounts. He's done sales. He's managed sales. He's been on the phones. He's collected AR. Like, people who have done all of these things. How can we take this person who now has all the skills and put them somewhere that they can thrive for themselves in the business?
Yeah. This is huge. And this is one of those things that we never even really thought about until we started this podcast and it became a 50 for 50. But we looked back and we looked at all of our leaders and realized all of the different roles that they've played along the way. So I'm going to give you one benefit for people, and then I'm going to give you one benefit for the company for this. So from a people perspective, I think the advantage of this is a lot of times to progress your skill set or your career, you have to move companies these days. And so unfortunately, what happens is you build up all these relationships, you build up all this equity and knowledge at the company that you're at, and then the next day you're out the door and you have to start from ground zero. In this, when people know that they can move around and have different opportunities, it helps your, it not only helps the employees from a skill set perspective and how to make them more desirable in the future for whatever role they want to play, but also helps just the, you know, the retention of employees and keeping your good people here when they know there's more opportunities. The other thing is for the company, where this really shows itself, where I feel like it at least is at the higher levels as people progress through the organization, because you're not as concerned as I think most companies when they have a issue with sales, they go figure out, okay, well, we need to go find a new sales leader.
That's right.
Or they have an issue in operations and we need to go outside and find a new operations leader. Here, you can pivot people to your biggest problems as the organization. And you don't have to be worried about, well, that person doesn't have the experience there because they've done these different roles throughout the time. It's something we're literally in the process of doing right now. We have our VPs who have all played a variety of different roles on the outbound side that are now all taking smaller teams on, really to just make things a little bit smaller, be a little closer to the clients, closer to the people. I couldn't do that if Jessica wasn't a SDR, a PSM, did training, ran implementations, did account management. Same thing with Will, did four different divisions. Amy has done a variety. You know, it's just, it's a huge benefit for your company.
It does have downside though. Like it's sure. it's got a couple of downsides, which we should discuss and talk about how you mitigate risk against. So one downside is it can breed very insular thinking. Like you grew up doing this, so like you're going to sort of continue doing what you've done. So you got to be careful with the people you pick. I mean, if you have good, honest, disagreeable sometimes people, that is very important. Otherwise, you just get complete one track thinking. The other is you don't get perspectives from the outside world on certain things.
Sure.
And so it's really important to have, of course, like the occasion, I'm the occasional outside hire here. So I think that is important. But also whether it's consultants or just making sure you're staying really engaged with the market that you're in or what have you.
Sure.
But the benefits far outweigh it. Like knowing that somebody we put in a job has already worked here in different jobs, like generally speaking, high performers are high performers, whatever you give them. And I think where people really miss on this, Eric, is people are so, like they so overestimate how different being an account manager is from a salesperson. Or even an SDR is from an accountant. I mean, it's don't go nuts with that.
Sure. Yeah. The other downside to this is I would say is you don't really burn the bridge. So for example, if you're going to do this, you're just not going to get people that are going to be willing to take those risks if you don't have a fallback plan if it doesn't pan out.
Yeah.
Like there's always got to be a spot in the organization. And I think it's sometimes when you do this too much, people are just like, well, this is just going to be my thing for the next however so long. So if it doesn't work out, I'll just go whatever. So you could lose a little bit of accountability in it. But again, I think the cons or the pros way outweigh the cons. And I think think about your people. Like when I go from being managed by, I'm just going to use two names here, but Elliot Nestor to Katie Payne, for example.
You're using last names.
Last names, yeah.
These are real people.
But, you know, Elliot is going to bring a skill set of sales, business acumen, done accounts for a long time, different perspective on things. Katie, operationally, very sound, understands how so a business works and structure and keeping, you know, consistency and different items like that. Like when you look at those two, I'm getting exposure to two very different leaders, which is really helping me in my career, which I think is a big deal.
Yeah, and it's, you know, last thing we'll say on the topic. Some people aren't right for this.
Sure.
Fair enough. But, you know, we have a lot of conversations, even me. And Eric, I know you're like this, you know, where we're talking about ourselves and what we're going to do. And you know my answer? I know it's the same as yours. Put me wherever you want.
Yeah.
Like, whatever you want me to do,
yeah,
I'll do it. And when you start getting people in your organization that just go, you know, hey, you drop me in the forest, I'll find my way out.
Yep.
It makes for a real great organization and a fun group to work with.
Yep. Very good point. Good job.
I think that was all right.
That was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did it. We did our best. We did our best. But you know what? It's time to head over to the mine. Yeah. Cue the pickaxe. Cue the pickaxe.
You're so demanding with the pickaxe.
You know, you just, people want to hear it. People want to hear it. You're their favorite character. This is their favorite sound. They love the pickaxe.
You need a character. Maybe that'll help your...
The miner.
Help your favorables.
The miner?
Yeah.
All right. So for today, we're going to keep this one really, really simple. But it's a huge mistake that everybody makes in regard to your SDRs. And I'm where I feel like this mistake gets made even more is if you have SDRs internally. So listen up if you're a company that's currently managing SDRs internally.
Okay.
Do not overload your SDRs with information about your company and services and what they need to do to set an appointment. The information they need, I like to use a funnel. You have all this information. You have case studies, your website, your brochures, your videos, your tribal knowledge from 10 years in business. And people try to give their make their SDR an expert right in the beginning. But it all goes through a funnel, and they really only need so much to be able to set an appointment. Because at the end of the day, what are they trying to do? They're trying to open the door, get the person excited, make sure they show up so you can go out and discover more about them and talk about your services. So I'm going to give you the short list because I feel like I could make a cold call with just this information and knowing nothing else about the industry, about anything else. First thing, target market. Got to know who you're targeting. Got to know the minimum qualifiers, got to know the industries we can and can't work at, got to know the geographies. And then what do those people care about? Like generally, I don't need to know the specifics of every single position that I could potentially talk to. But ultimately, when I'm calling about the service or product, what do people care about? Then from there, what are the three problems we solve for those people? Just three. Go to five if you want, but keep it small. You don't need 20 different problems that you solve. What are the three and what are the ones that are the most common that people want solved? Pick those. Have those three problems. Have three case studies. And I would put case studies in asterisks, just a little story. Like they don't need a full-blown case study. Just a little story that goes around how you've solved that problem for others. And in that story, it should say how you solved that better than your competitors or better than status quo. And that's it. That's it. That's all I need to go set an appointment on your behalf because I'm going to ask questions and information's going to come up. And when in doubt, and they ask me a question, well, what about the G5 receptor? Or what about the AG3-4000? You know what? That's a great question. What I'd recommend is I set you up with Jeff because he's the expert when it comes to this. And you guys can have a great conversation about that. What's your calendar look like tomorrow?
Yep.
I think, pivot to the appointment.
There we go. So this is a little bit of a... It's a little bit of a fail-safe mechanism. Like, the less you know, the less you can say. And the less you can say, the more apt you are to go from cold call to appointment faster.
Exactly.
Faster. Because we've all seen SDRs fall into the trap of, I know a lot, and I'm going to tell you a lot. And that, friends, we have a word for. Well, maybe two words. Mini-pitching.
Yep.
We don't need mini-pitching. We want SDRing and we want pitching. There is no mini pitching. Mini Yep. pitching is no good. I don't need you giving the prospect more information so they can make a decision beyond I want to meet or I don't. That's the extent of it. And any more than that, you start to get into a situation where you have the SDR doing the job of the salesperson. And it's not to say the SDR can't be a great salesperson. Many of them can. Many of them do become great salespeople. But in that moment, I don't want the SDR pitching that prospect. Right. I want my salesperson pitching that prospect. So I think Eric's advice is great. The other thing about it is it really focuses you on the most important elements of the cold call, which I think we'd all agree are the volume and the tone.
Yep.
How many are you making and how do you sound? So that's my analysis of what you said and why it's important.
Yeah, and I think what I am not saying is you shouldn't ask good questions and you shouldn't let prospects talk and you shouldn't dive deeper and you shouldn't actively listen. But what we are saying is it's not your job to sell this prospect on your service. You are selling the appointment.
That's right.
Why is that appointment? Why is that 15 to 30 minutes valuable for you to sit down with us? So that's what we got from the mine today, from the miner. I need a better, I can't, the miner doesn't work. I don't like that.
What can we do?
You know, we'll think about it. Okay. We'll think about it. Let's see what the viewers think. You know, we got a lot of people out there listening. Maybe somebody's got something better.
Please suggest something to Eric. We love alliteration.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. All right. Tales from sales. What are you going to do with all these leads now that we kept it simple on the call?
So something that's coming up frequently now for me, and I walked through this whole exercise on the last podcast that I did, and nobody commented, meaning Eric or Scott. It was a great exercise, and they sort of poo-pooed it. But the bottom line is I have a really good working theory, especially in more transactional sales where sales cycles are shorter, that the difference between greatness and goodness is follow-up, And one aspect that we noticed with our best sellers is that their follow-up...
Poo-pooed it. We didn't poo-poo it.
Nobody jumped on and said, wow, I Jeff, loved that's it. A great exercise.
I thought
exercise.
It was awesome.
Okay, well...
What do I got? Pat your back? Come over there and pat your back next time.
That is exactly what I need. I thrive on positive feedback. Honest or not. But more to the point...
So your manager impacts your happiness, is what you're saying.
More to the point. I know that multimedia follow-up... Based on the data that I've looked at, multimedia follow-up is one of those separators between greatness and goodness in sales reps and sales person results. And we talked about it in Two Truths and a Lie, the vertical video, cell phone video. I want to give you a couple of ideas. So first, I do this all the time. I shoot videos of myself as the chief revenue officer, and I send them to prospects. I sit down with sales reps. They tell me about the prospect. If we think it's a good fit, I want to be engaged. I want to be involved, and I'll send a little video and letting them know, hey, I'm engaged on this. I've talked to the sales rep. We think this could be a good fit. We'd love to, you know, I don't want to take a ton of time with a call, but want to make sure that you know that I've looked at this and it's a good fit. Next, LinkedIn is obvious, but it's also underutilized, not because people don't know how to use LinkedIn in the follow-up process. LinkedIn is, think of LinkedIn just as an email touch in the follow-up process, even though you haven't connected, even though you haven't, you know, been corresponding on LinkedIn. If you're going to send a case study on email, or you're going to send a little snippet or something interesting, send it on LinkedIn. Next, I don't like FaceTime. Some people do cold FaceTiming. Not my thing. Some people do it. Texting. I am always a proponent of texting once you feel you've had the permission. The way that I get that permission is, hey, look, you know, as far as follow-up goes, I know people sometimes phone, sometimes email. Text is easier for most. Is that okay if I text you? How are you mixing up those mediums? Am I sending a video on LinkedIn? Am I doing an audio voicemail on LinkedIn? How am I calling? There are so many different mediums. And what I'm telling you as our loyal, loving audience is the follow-up variety of mediums matters and will help you increase close rates.
Love this. You know, Jeff, this is such a great idea. Great job.
Thank you.
You did awesome on
you
this.
You hear that? Everybody hear that? Thank you.
That's the pat on your back. I think this is important for, I think about myself. This is my theory on it. I'm very text heavy. Like Scott texts me, you text me, like I family text, like I'm usually more accessible via text.
Really? Millennials, more accessible via
text. Imagine that.
Somebody take that down as a note.
However, you will stand out more. It's very easy for you to send me a text and it to just get lost in the text. But if I pop into my LinkedIn and I see a video,
right,
that's going to stand out a little bit more.
Yes.
So it's not that I love LinkedIn. Like I may not even be a LinkedIn communicator, but I'll check my LinkedIn just about every day or every other day. I pop in there and I see a video. Like, I think that's the important of, you need to hit them in channels, even though that they may not use those channels as much. If that's the case, you may stand out more.
Don't forget mail. Don't forget sending a package.
Yeah.
It's just so easy to email. That's sure. The reality. That's what this is all saying. It's like, it's so easy to email. Like, I'm just going to email and email and email and email. It's like, God, please stop.
Please stop.
Use variety.
Great job. Tales from Sales. from the man himself, the man, the myth, the legend, the sheriff.
Thank you.
The self-proclaimed favorite character on the show.
No doubt.
I guess not self-proclaimed. I guess actually proclaimed. Two people. That doesn't count.
The people have spoken.
We need to put a poll up. I bet Scott's the favorite, honestly.
All right. He's my favorite.
He's your favorite. All right. The moment you've all been waiting for. Mm. That horn sounds different, doesn't it?
Has that gotten longer?
It's gotten longer and a little louder. Yeah.
I think it has.
Ryan switched it up on us.
Our producer says no. I see.
Yeah, I think that's gotten a little longer. And I like it because this is the most important section of the show, to do or not to do. You're out there in the wild, in the real world. You're trying to figure out, should I do this or should I not do this? We try to shy away from sports on here. You know, we do too many, you know, we do too much, too many sports. But you know what? I can't help but notice it was 70 degrees a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And you know what happens when the weather starts getting nice, Jeff?
What's that?
We start hitting the golf course.
Yeah.
We start hitting the golf course. You're playing with your buddies. There might be a friendly little wager on the line or not.
We're gambling.
Here is my question. Should you take two off the first tee or not? Should you have prepared? You got your practice swings and you are in the game. It is a real score. You don't get two off the first tee? Or should you be allowed to take two off the first tee?
Yeah. All of a sudden, we're Barstool Sports now. All right, I'm going to give you a two off the... If you're still with us and you don't know shit about golf, now I'm going to explain this. So the idea in golf, obviously, is you play nine or more often 18 holes. And you're competing against one, two, three other people in your group of four. And the idea is that you're going to be on the first tee and you're going to hit either one shot or you're going to hit one shot with the option to hit a second one because it's the first shot you've hit all day.
Right.
Right. I'm going to tell you something.
Maybe the driving range was closed. Maybe, you know, there could be circumstances.
There could be circumstances. And you can apply this to life. Like you can think of all the other places where you get a practice shot before you go. It's real in life. But actually, you can't because that shit doesn't happen in real life. In real life, you don't get to be on a sales call and go, oh, yeah, I get two off the first tee. Let me start this call over. You could try it. You don't get to be sending out an invoice and screw it up by $100,000. Ooh, sorry, I needed to get two off the first tee. That was the first invoice I sent out this morning. I haven't had my coffee yet. Absolutely not. Nowhere in life do you get a practice. Do you get a mulligan? Do you get a screw up? Except for when you're screwing around with Todd and Brody on the damn golf course. You hit one shot, you get one shot in life. That's what you do.
I completely disagree.
Of course you do.
Yeah, you should absolutely get two. And here's my thing is you shouldn't waver back and forth. It's a known rule. No matter what you're playing, what are the stakes, unless you're on the PGA Tour, we're doing two shots off the first tee.
Isn't it unusual, though? Like, when I start going down, because I could tell you flinched a little. Like, in life, no, I'm dead serious. Where else does this happen? Where else do you get to do a thing with no consequences and then try it again? Like, where? I don't even know. Where? Nowhere.
Yeah, nowhere. You're right. You're right.
You can try shit in real life where there's an actual competition and go, nah, let me do that again. Oh, well, maybe in a podcast. Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Other than maybe here.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. This is actually our second off the tee. We recorded a podcast earlier. So.
I guess you're right. We just don't do that. I don't think you should be able to do second takes in podcasts either now that I'm saying it.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Lay
we should
it
do
out
it live.
There.
Live on LinkedIn.
Lay it out there.
Lay it out there.
Your first take's your best take.
I respect it.
Yeah.
Okay. What an episode today. Appreciate it, Jeff. Missed our boy, but he'll be back next week.
Sure.
And the gang will all be here. As always, thank you for listening. Hopefully, you took away a couple things to help take that business to $50 million and beyond. You know, that's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm.
Let's grow.
As your favorite character, let's grow.
Does it sound like our culture would be the right fit for you? Join the nation's fastest growing marketing company. Click the link below to start your journey today.